All right. It is Maundy Thursday, and since we cannot gather together today as we normally would, I thought I would record a little video for you. Obviously, this is not the same. This is no substitute for meeting together, but maybe it's the best we can do under the circumstances. I still wanted to communicate to you, and I didn't want to just write another email. So I thought I would talk to you this way a little bit and talk to you about what's going on and talk to you about Maundy Thursday. I'm here in my office in the basement of my house, and I apologize for how it looks. I actually do know where pretty much everything is in my office, even though it looks like a mess. This is where I do a lot of my work. My dog is down here. My dog Chloe's down here at my feet right now, where she kind of always is when I'm down here. If you've been to our house, you've met Chloe, because she's just that kind of dog. Whether you wanted to or not, you've met her because she's just a real friendly dog. But in her old age, she's kind of gotten lazy, and now she just kind of lays around all day and tends to just lay right here on my feet. This is Maundy Thursday, of course, and Maundy Thursday has always been one of my favorite feast days of the church year, one of my favorite days in the church calendar. I love the way our church celebrates Maundy Thursday. I love the way we do Maundy Thursday together at TPC with our feast together, the meal that we share, and of course the Lord's Supper coming with that. It's the one time we do the Lord's Supper with a real meal before it. I love the liturgy we use, the singing together, reading John 13. It's all glorious. And it's always been such a community strengthening event for us at TPC. I think it's really served us well. Of course, we're missing it this year because of the quarantine that we find ourselves under. I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you in a lot of different ways with this video today. One thing I'd want to encourage you to do is find ways as a family to commemorate John 13. We can't get together as a church family, but you can perhaps still find some things to do to celebrate Thursday of Holy Week as a family. Maybe it's as simple as after dinner reading John 13. If you're going to do the Good Friday fast, it'll be the last meal you have together for 24 hours. So, you know, take some time and maybe read through John 13, talk about together how you might put it into practice, how you can wash one another's feet in various kinds of ways. Something like that might be a really good exercise to do. I talk about this every year, but I'll repeat it here again. I know probably most of you already know this, but I think it's worth going over again. Maundy Thursday gets its name from what happens in John 13. You know, the context is Jesus and the disciples are in the upper room. This is the night when he will be betrayed and then tried, and of course, then the next day crucified. And in that context, they're celebrating what appears to be a Passover meal together, and Jesus transforms that Passover meal into what we know as the Lord's Supper. And it's in that context, of course, at the beginning, he washes their feet, and even though he's the master and Lord over all, he stoops and puts himself beneath them, and he stoops to their feet, and he washes their feet for them. And then in that context, he gives them what he calls a new command. He says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you." And that word Maundy comes from the Latin word for mandate or for commandment. So really, it's the Latin term mandatum. And so really, Maundy Thursday, if we wanted to put it in English, it's something like New Commandment Thursday or Mandate Thursday, something like that, I think really captures what it's about. It's about the love that Christ has shown for us and how we are called to model our lives after his and our love after his. We're to love in the same way that Christ is loved. It's interesting that Jesus calls this command to love a new commandment. Certainly, there was nothing new about the command to love. God's people had been commanded to love before that evening. That goes back to the Old Testament law, of course. But there is something new about it. The world had never seen a love like the love of Jesus, the love of God embodied, the love of God incarnate. His love seen in washing their feet. That kind of humility had never been seen before. Ultimately, his love seen in laying down his life for his disciples. That kind of love had never been witnessed before. And so there is something new about it. It's this radical new example we've been given of how we are to love one another. Now, I miss getting together with you all tonight and getting to talk about this love in person and getting to feast and fellowship together. And certainly, you know, like all of you, I'm hoping we can do that really, really soon. We're praying that God makes it safe and appropriate for us to do that very, very soon. But, you know, we're in this time of quarantine. And one thing that I've noticed is, you know, is a lot of different articles have come out about the quarantine. And of course, a lot of them are dealing with the health situation and what's going on with doctors and nurses and the projections about what's going to happen and all that kind of thing. But there's another strand of articles that I've seen that I've been really interested in. And these are articles that talk about the effects of the social isolation, or what they were at first calling social distancing. What's the impact of this social distancing? You know, if you think about it, this is a time where we've largely been removed from one another. We still can be involved with one another, but not at close, you know, not in close physical proximity. And I do think that makes a difference. And I think during this time of being largely isolated from one another, if nothing else, you know, if you're looking for silver linings in this, one silver lining I think you can take away is that this time of isolation shows us in really tangible ways just how important community is. This time of being away from your church family shows you just how important church family is. This time of being isolated shows you just how important fellowship is. We're learning in new ways how important the church family is. Now, we're realizing these things, you know, just as friendship and fellowship have been greatly diminished, largely taken away from us, at least in a you know, physically close kind of way. We're learning how important these things really are. I've actually got a stack of articles here on my desk I've been working through that talk about just how dangerous long periods of social isolation can be. As humans made in the image of the triune God, we're made for community. So you take that community away, and there's something dehumanizing about it. It's contrary to how God has made us to live. It's why we find that solitary confinement is the worst form of punishment. One of these articles says this: over long periods of time, social isolation can increase the risk of a variety of health problems, including heart disease, depression, dementia, and even death. So it's like if the virus doesn't get you, then maybe the isolation will. I mean, that paints a really negative picture, a really dire picture, but there's an element of truth in that. There's a headline here I've got: coronavirus will also cause a loneliness epidemic. It says we need to take both social distancing and the social recession it will cause seriously. Even when we talk about the economic impact of the shutdown due to the virus, the economic impact of that, of course, can be absolutely massive. And people are talking about, will this send us into an economic recession? But there's also the danger of a kind of social recession. If we're apart from one another, does it break down the bonds of community? And as you can see in these articles, and I won't read you any more quotes from these articles, but again and again, they make the point that it's not just our physical health that is at stake, it's our social, and I would even say spiritual health. Not that God can't sustain us in this kind of situation, but it's important to recognize we're not made to live this way. And it does have an impact, and we need to recognize that. So you might ask, well, okay, then what's the answer? What is the answer if we have to go through this social isolation and there are dangers of not just an economic recession, but a social recession? What's the answer to all of this? Well, I've been thinking about this lately. I was going back through C.S. Lewis's book, Mere Christianity, which is really one of my favorites. But Lewis uses an illustration in his book for the gospel. And it's an illustration I've never really liked. I use a lot of Lewis's illustrations. I steal a lot of illustrations from him, but I've never stolen this one because I really didn't care for it much when I first read it. But I do think it's fitting under these circumstances. Let me read to you. This is from, again, Mere Christianity. And just read a paragraph here for you. It says, in our natural state, we are not sons of God, only, so to speak, statues. We have not got zoe, or spiritual life, only bios, or biological life, which is presently going to run down and die. Now, the whole offer which Christianity makes is this: that we can, if we let God have his way, come to share in the life of Christ. If we do, we shall then be sharing a life which was begotten, not made, which always has existed and always will exist. So everybody has bios, biological life, but that life is temporary and it's running down. But if you are connected to Christ and come to share in his life, that's an eternal life. You're sharing in the life of the eternal Christ, the eternal God. If we do, we shall then be sharing a life which was begotten, not made, which always has existed and always will exist. Christ is the Son of God. If we share in this kind of life, we also shall be sons of God. We shall love the Father as he does, and the Holy Spirit will arise in us. He came to this world and became a man in order to spread to other men the kind of life he has by what I call good infection. Every Christian is to become a little Christ. The whole purpose of becoming a Christian is simply nothing else. Okay, did you catch that? He talks about this life of Christ that we receive as a good infection. It's a life that spreads. It's a life that becomes contagious. You get infected with it, and then you share it with others, and then they get this life, and then they spread it to others, and it grows, maybe even exponentially. You know, if you look at the history of the church, the growth of the church. This is the picture that Lewis paints for us. The world was dead. The world was spiritually dead, and Jesus came to bring the world back to life, to infect the human race with new life, a kind of life that spreads, and a kind of life that lasts forever. And you see this in all kinds of ways. There are a lot of different ways to think about this. One of my favorites is to think about the story in the Gospels of Jesus and the woman who had a flow of blood. And this woman under the Old Covenant law is unclean. And so she spreads uncleanness everywhere she goes. Any person she touches becomes unclean. She infects them with her uncleanness. Her uncleanness is contagious. But it's interesting. There's this big crowd gathering around Jesus. The woman makes her way through that crowd. She comes up to Jesus. She grabs hold of the wing of his garment, the hem of his garment. And what happens? She cannot infect him. He is immune to her uncleanness. So her uncleanness doesn't spread. Her death doesn't spread to him. Jesus is immune to all of that. Rather, he infects her, as it were. He infects her with his life. He transmits his life to her. His righteousness, his cleanness flows to her. It spreads to her. It's as if his life is contagious. Now, it's really interesting to me in Romans chapter 5, when Paul is talking about what we call original sin, he says that when Adam sinned, death spread to all men. It's like Adam caught the virus of death. He was infected with death, and then that death spread to all men. That death was contagious, and the infection rate was 100%. Everybody caught this virus of death from Adam. Under the old Adam, under the reign of the old Adam, death was contagious. Death spread to all men. But if you go on and continue reading in Romans chapter 5, you find that now that the new Adam has come, now that Christ has come, now life spreads. It's as if he has infected the human race with life, and now that life spreads to all, and it creates a new human race that will live forever. A virus that doesn't kill, but a virus that makes alive. And this is why I don't like the illustration. It kind of breaks down when you talk about it this way. But Christ has infected us with his life, and that life spreads. That's really the important thing. Under the old Adam, death was contagious. Death spread from Adam to all men. The infection rate was 100%. But under the reign of the new Adam, life is contagious. Life spreads. This is the good infection C.S. Lewis is talking about. We've been infected with Christ's love, and that love flows out from us. That love spreads out from us. Now take this one step further. What does death do to us? Well, death drives us apart. Death cuts us off from God. The spread of death, this sin and death that spread from Adam to all men really isolates us from one another. All you have to do is read the early chapters of Genesis and you see this. Husband turning against wife, brother turning against brother. Pretty soon the whole human race is at odds with one another. There's all this strife and violence, and that's why God brings the flood. This death has spread, and this death isolates people. It drives people apart as if they have to quarantine themselves from one another for safety's sake. Really, that's what this quarantine is. You can even think of this quarantine as a little picture of death, a little taste of what death is like. This is what it's like to be unclean, to be isolated. But what does Christ's life do? Christ's life brings us together. When we're infected with Christ's life, we're pulled together. We're drawn together into a new family. the communion of saints is formed, the covenant family of God, this community of love. The church is the result of this infection, this good infection that Christ has turned loose in the world. And the church is also how this good infection is spread. It's now our calling to spread the love and the life of Jesus, to touch others, whether physically or not, but to touch others in a way with the love and the life of Christ, so it will spread to them as well. So today on this Maundy Thursday, let's remember what Christ has done for us. That's really what Holy Week is about. It's about commemorating all that Christ has done for us, that he gave up his life that we might have life. He gave up his life in order to give us life. He suffered that death he did not deserve, that we might have a life we do not deserve. He gave up his life to give us eternal life. And that life now spreads. That life spreads from us to others as we love one another. Through our love for one another, that life spreads. So this Maundy Thursday, don't just think about a contagious virus that's on the loose. Focus on the contagious love that Christ has turned loose. Ask, how can you spread that love to others? How can you be an agent or an instrument of spreading that love and that life to others? This Maundy Thursday, don't just wash your hands. I mean, wash your hands. We need to keep doing that kind of thing. Don't just wash your hands, but look for ways to wash feet as well. That's really what Maundy Thursday is all about. It's about showing and spreading the love of Christ to others. All right. Thank you all very much. I'm praying for you, and I hope we can see one another again soon.